The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Inspiring interviews with today's top landlords. This is the Rental Income Podcast. And now, Dan Lane.
I've got a really inspiring guest joining us on the show today. It's really an incredible story, but it's so simple at the same time. He saved money out of his paycheck. He put some money aside every paycheck. Eventually, he had enough money for a down payment to buy a rental property. He bought that property. That property started generating cash flow. He put that money aside, plus the money he was putting aside from each paycheck. And eventually, he had enough cash to buy a second property. And he just kept on repeating this process over and over again. And by the time he was 35, he had enough cash flow that he had reached financial independence and he was able to quit his job. And today he lives life on his terms. It's really an incredible story. So we're going to get into some of the details. But first, let's take a quick break. We'll thank our sponsors. We'll come right back and we'll talk to Jason Perro from Erie.
Are you looking for actionable steps to create wealth and passive income? As a top-ranked business and investing podcast with over 800 five-star reviews, the Passive Real Estate Investing Show is packed with strategies and insight for putting money in your pocket. Marco Santarelli from Narada Real Estate Investments brings his expertise and knowledge on both passive and turnkey real estate investing, and he provides listeners with helpful tools and tips to create the wealth you've always wanted. Head over to iTunes or Google Play today and subscribe to Passive Real Estate Investing Podcast or visit PassiveRealEstateInvesting.com. That's PassiveRealEstateInvesting.com. The first step in buying a rental property is to get pre-qualified, and I would suggest you work with a lender that specializes in working with investors, because the last thing you want to have happen is to get to closing and find out the money's not there and you can't close. The lender that I recommend is Chaley Ridge from Ridge Lending Group. She's a nationwide lender, and she'll pre-qualify you for free if you mention Rental Income Podcast. Find out more today. Contact Chaley at ridgelendinggroup.com. That's R-I-D-G-E, lendinggroup.com. And MLS 42056. Hey, Jason, welcome to the podcast. So why don't we start with you kind of painting a picture of what your life is like today and what rentals have done for you. And then we'll kind of take a step back and figure out how you got there.
Okay. Sounds good, Dan. So my life today is, first off, I feel like I'm blessed beyond measure. I mean, my wife and I can kind of do what we want, when we want, without having to answer to anybody but ourselves or our employees. So Erie, Pennsylvania is not known for warm winters, so we usually get away a couple times during the winter, just experiencing and seeing new things. So able to provide those types of experiences for my family, able to have the freedom to be able to participate and be involved with activities at my kids' school, their sporting events, you know, really don't have to miss anything that we don't want to because we're always there. And just have a ton of flexibility. I'm able to go to the gym every morning and, you know, I can work as hard or as little in my business as I want to. And we've set it up so a lot of things are, I don't want to say they're on autopilot, but they don't require having to be in an office or a cubicle or in front of customers, you know, 8 or 10, 12 hours a day type of thing.
And all of your income today is from rental properties?
Yeah,
Awesome. Well, I love it. I mean, this is really inspiring to see that this is possible. So let's take a step back and talk about how you first got started, because it wasn't like you decided you were going to buy rentals and you ended up where you are today. I mean, this took a while. How long did it take you from the time you bought your first rental until you reached financial independence?
So that really was 11 years of working a day job. My wife and I did it the old fashioned way. We bought our first rental actually before we were married, closed on that a week before 9/11 in 2001. Was just a little duplex that, you know, provided nice cash flow. And I think at the time it, the cash flow from the property paid for my student loans. And, I mean, there was a whole reason we wanted to get into real estate and thought that, hey, that would help us become millionaires one day, but didn't, you know, really couldn't think beyond that. But started out, had a goal to buy a rental or two every year. And so the first year we bought a duplex, the next year we bought a duplex and a four unit. The year after that, it was a four unit. And then, you know, we just kept adding slowly that way. So from like 01 through middle of 05, we built up a portfolio of 23 apartment units.
And it was just
five. Oh, go ahead.
It was just steady, just buying one or two properties a year.
Yeah. Yeah. We did it the old fashioned way. We saved up our money for a down payment and, you know, just put the money as a down payment, got, you know, local like bank financing at 15-year mortgages. You know, nothing fancy, just kind of that's the only method I knew. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, this is really before a lot of the online and, you know, creative real estate financing and, strategies that I didn't know, existed.
Now, take me back. So when you bought that first property, you said you put it on a 15-year mortgage. When you have a 15-year mortgage, your payment is higher, so your cash flow is going to be less. Were you not focused as much on the cash flow at the beginning, or were you just thinking, I need to get this property paid off as fast as possible?
At the time, you know, I was happy with whatever cash flow we were making, and then just figured I'd keep buying property and we get enough of them. It would be, we'd reach that income level or income goal that we had, set in mind. So, but you are right that shorter term financing definitely makes it tough. You know, when you need a new roof or, you know, a furnace breaks down in the middle
right.
of winter,
yeah.
or those big capital expenditures that can, you know, kind of come out of nowhere.
Now, a lot of people, they buy a property or two, they start making some cash flow, and then immediately they kind of inflate their lifestyle. How did you stop that from happening? Like, did you make it a point to not spend any of the cash flow, or like, how did you make that work?
So, I think I was obsessed with at the time with becoming a millionaire or being a successful real estate investor and at all costs. And so we, you know, my wife and I were young when we started, and, we just had this in our heads that we were going to live modestly. You know, we didn't live on rice and beans or leftovers all the time, but we definitely lived cheap. We didn't take a lot of vacations. We didn't buy the fanciest cars. I guess we were fortunate that both of our jobs at the time had company vehicles. So we just pummeled all of our money away into this plan of buying real estate and investing as much as we could. So, you know, it didn't come until later till we really like inflated our lifestyle till we knew that sacrifice early on would take us way further in life, you know, at a later point.
Sure.
So I think just having that discipline. But I think in retrospect, I would have, you know, enjoyed things a little bit more at that time, but we also had really good day jobs. And so it was one of those scenarios where we were making a lot of money that we just didn't really know how to spend it. And so, you know, we didn't go for the, you know, fanciest house or the, you know, most expensive car at the time, because we didn't really need to. We were still young enough and you know, those types of, you know, I guess the finer things in life weren't really calling it our name
right.
at that time. So just had that discipline.
So you were saving for the down payments by saving excess money from your job, and then also taking that cash flow and just kind of piling it up and then using that as down payments to buy those initial properties?
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome. Now, at some point, your wife and you are both working, and you went from two incomes down to one. So she initially left her job and you kept working. Was that a big decision to give up that second income? Because you're going to have less money, that you're almost taking a pay cut. What was that thought process like?
It was, so what happened, she was working for a pharmaceutical company, and at the time the industry was really contracting, and So she got downsized, and it was the second downsize that she had experienced by the time we had, you know, both of our kids, you know, we were in a new house. And so the decision was sort of made for her. And then we just said, hey, I'll give it a few, I'll personally give it a few more years of hard work at the day job to really build up our portfolio to the level we wanted it, and then walk away. And that really just cemented in our minds how dispensable human beings are to corporate America.
Yeah, they don't care.
You know, it's all about the bottom line. Yep. And they don't really care as a whole, you know, whether, you know, you and your family are stable and happy and fulfilled. I mean, if you don't fit their overall corporate goals, then, you know, you're dispensable. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. That's just sort of
just business,
how it is.
And, right.
You know, and so then that really cemented that vision that, hey, we gotta get out of the rat race as soon as possible.
All right. So then she quits her job. You're getting by on your income. Now, is the rental income supplementing your lifestyle at all at this point, or are you exclusively living on your salary?
So at that time, we were still exclusively living on my salary. I was fortunate enough that the day jobs that I had had were pretty lucrative for a sales position, especially in Erie, Pennsylvania, where the cost of living is relatively low.
Mm-hmm.
So we were fortunate in that sense that, you know, that rental income kind of still built upon itself, and we didn't need to touch it. So we just kept reinvesting that back into the business and still had income from my job left over to reinvest however we saw fit.
Now, were you at this point, were you trying to get your rental income up to the level that your W-2 income was, or were you thinking we can actually go less on the rental income because we're not spending all the money that I'm making at your job because you're reinvesting money into building your portfolio?
Yeah. I mean, I think when we, you know, decided that I was going to leave my day job or at least put a deadline or a timeline to it, really felt like we wanted to have that income at or above where my day job income was. And that was because, I think the idea was that we wanted just to make sure that we had access and we could live comfortably and maybe, you know, increase our lifestyle, if we chose to.
That's perfect. All right. So you get there. So was it like, what was that moment like when you realized that, you know, you keep acquiring more and more units, you've got your income at, or your rental income is at or above your W-2 income. What was the thought process like that, hey, well, I don't need to work anymore. I'm making more money by not working on the rentals. Like, how did you process that in your head?
So it was, first it was exhilarating. I had worked really hard and had a record year at my day job. I was rep of the year, and I said, you know what, I'm going to leave on top, and I'm going to quit my job and go off and be a full-time real estate entrepreneur. And so I submit my resignation, and the company said, no, we're not going to let you quit. We'll give you a different territory, something a little bit closer to home, less demanding. And I got kind of sucked back in, you know, and so then for the next year and a half, I was miserable. My heart wasn't really into it. And so it was messy. I got put on a performance plan and I said, gosh, this is for the birds. I just need to quit. And then I was miserable. It was very stressful. Just wasn't living my best life, for sure. And so, I ended up, you know, getting put on a plan. And at that time I was getting ready to close a 72 unit deal. So I was selling some property off and 1031 exchanging that into a nice portfolio that a gentleman was selling to me. And so I think I was let go from the job at right at the time that I was closing that larger deal. And so the decision was made for me. I mean, yeah. I said, you know what, I'm not going to carry on and be in this miserable corporate existence. And so I just held on long enough just to make sure that, you know, and I like ended the relationship with the employer that, you know, that I was able to qualify for, you know, for some extended health insurance and have a little bit of savings in the bank.
Yeah.
So that you know, so there was like not such a hard balance when leaving that job. So
now health insurance is a major thing that I think a lot of people don't really think about as much. So like how do you get health insurance today?
Well, yes, and through a insurance broker. So you know, in this business, you make friends with your different insurance providers. And so at the time I had it quoted, and it was way less than I thought it was going to be. I mean, I chose a high deductible plan, and at the time for my family of four, it was maybe $250-$300 a month. So
wow. It's pretty cheap.
Yeah, it wasn't much. Now yeah. It's gone up by about $1,000 a month.
Wow.
Since then, the costs okay. have gone up, you know, significantly in the past 5 or 6 years. But again, you know, there's, that's just the line item in someone's budget that they have to figure out, how they're going to pay for that. And, you know, whether they're syndicating properties or flipping properties or whatever the method is, you know, it's not an insurmountable amount. It's something that's probably realistic for any, I mean, the numbers vary, you know, from family to family and situation to situation, but you know, one quick flip of a house can easily make up that cost, or cash flow from one property, you know, one or two properties mm-hmm. can make up for that. And so it's not as big of a deal as people would think.
Right. Right. Now, what about, you've continued to build your portfolio after you left your job, and banks love W-2 income. So when you don't have that anymore, has it been a challenge to get financing?
Yes, but not in the way you would think. I think that the financing challenge is probably more of a mindset situation. So when I had that W-2 income, in my mind, I thought that was the most important thing. But really, when I built up that confidence level and that idea that, hey, you know what, I am a full-time real estate entrepreneur. This thing provides more than adequate income to obtain bank financing. And then there was a history. So it wasn't as though I left my day job after, you know, getting in and investing in property for a year. We had been buying property for 11 years and had millions of dollars of assets at that point. So it was easier, but I had this fear in my mind that it was going to be much more difficult. But I think it really spoke to the power of building those strong relationships that we had with our local and regional lenders at least initially that we used primarily for our transactions. And so leaving that day job was just a natural progression and got those, you know, loan guys and gals to buy into our story of, hey, you know what, we're built this portfolio so we can, so we can afford to leave our day job and work for ourselves. And that was really that goal and that story at the time that, you know, and I think that a lot of times the banks will buy into you and your story and your business more so than, you know, the W-2 income is only a part of it. But if your story and your track record is beyond that, they're not even really going to worry about
right.
the W-2.
Now, what about managing the portfolio? So like when you were at that point, when you're working full time and you've got this growing portfolio, were you managing it yourself or did you use property managers?
So I had, we self-managed, but it was through an internal payroll. So, with this first large deal I did in 2005 came with it a maintenance person and, a tenant at the time who ended up evolving into my first property manager. So, you know, I had also taken a more demanding job. And so this person that evolved into the property manager, they started doing showings for me and they started doing the leasing. And I realized that by delegating and hiring out that sure, I was giving up some cash flow, but it you know, kind of allowed for that ability to grow without all the pressure of doing everything ourselves.
Right.
So, you know, if I was on the road a lot as a traveling salesperson. So, you know, if I'm on the road from like say 5 to 7 a.m. getting to my, you know, I worked in medical surgical sales. So if I was getting to a hospital, you know, for some cases in the OR, you know, I could talk to my property manager at 6:30 in the morning or 7 in the morning. And that was conducive to her schedule. And we'd talk throughout the day. And so whether I was, you know, on my way home from work or to work or in between sales calls, you know, I was able to do a lot of things remotely. And even, you know, even with the first maintenance guy, same thing. I would spend my downtime planning their workflow, but then taking somebody that was, you know, a little bit of a self-motivated type of person and, you know, and being able to check in with them periodically really was that first taste or that first step of getting a full-fledged payroll.
That's great. And so you've got the same setup today? Like, so a tenant would never call you personally today, would they?
Well, I would like to say no, but unfortunately, you know, if somebody tries hard enough, they can find my phone number.
Okay.
And,
yep.
And I didn't, and I'll be completely candid. I mean, when we started out, I always had put my name on the properties when I started. So my phone number and contact info was out there, but I would say more often than not, I just, if somebody does call me, you know, I only get involved if it's like a time sensitive or a crucial matter. And I just, everything property wise gets deflected to the proper teammate, whether it be a subcontractor, property manager, bookkeeper, leasing agent, you name it. So we do have an infrastructure now and people can get a hold of me, but I will tell tenants that I'm not going to return a phone call if it's something that's not like, you know, if they're like an urgent matter, if they're right. Just calling because they want to call me, then they're not going to, they'll just get blocked and told to follow the process channels.
So your role is really to manage your team. Like you've got different people that are doing different functions. So you're managing them and then looking to acquire more deals, raise money, activities like that, right?
So yeah, focused on the, I've really learned in the last couple of years, the best use of my time is focusing on the activities that drive the business. So acquiring deals, hiring and acquiring the right folks to be on our team. So, you know, it's really like about alignment of people and goals and resources. So it's like the revenue generating activities and the revenue saving activities. So I'm actually in the process of hiring some more of the administrative side of my business so I can continue to focus more on the capital raising and team building and deal making side of it as opposed to just handling the day to day.
Yeah, that's awesome.
But that's the hard part about this business is as you grow it, you know, there's no magic formula that says, hey, when you get to this many units, you should have a, you know, an office manager, and this many units, you should have a business manager. It's just something that I learned that almost intuitively, when you find yourself getting dragged into areas of the business that you don't really need to spend your time, or that there's something at somewhere, somebody that you could hire that has better skills than you do at that particular task, that's when you need to hire them. And you know, kind of, like that's a good problem to have.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's like, you're focused on the right things. I see so many landlords that they're obsessed because of the way that a tenant is talking to them, or they're obsessed about a repair problem. But it seems like you're not really even involved with anything like that. Right.
Right. I learned because I used to be that guy that would be obsessed with some little maintenance issue or some problem a tenant was having. And I've really learn the value of putting systems in place and having people that buy into those systems so that, you know, if a tenant calls about a maintenance issue, it gets routed to the right the right person or the right subcontractor. And then the issue gets handled and reported back to me that it was taken care of. And at the point now where I don't need to know every little issue that's handled, I need to know the bigger metrics of, all right, how many units or how many maintenance calls do we have this week? And what was our response rate? What was the, you know, the completion rate? And really dig into those areas and see, you know, are we being the most efficient we can be, or are we, you know, is there areas for improvement? So, yeah. So rather than just get pulled into 1,000 different directions, I can take that macro look on the business and really determine, hey, what can we tweak to keep improving that area of the business? So, as opposed to just like responding to every phone call or every text message that would come in about about some, you know, non-important issue.
I love it. Well, it sounds like you've done everything right, and congratulations on pulling this all off. This is really, really incredible. Well, if somebody wants to reach out to you, what's a great way for someone to contact you?
So they can find me on Facebook. That's a easy way to find me. They can also get in contact through our website at perorealestate.com, and then also through my LinkedIn profile.
I've got links to everything on my website. You can find it at rentalincomepodcast.com/episode201. If this episode inspired you and you're ready to buy your first rental or you're ready to grow your portfolio, the first thing you need to do is get pre-approved for an investment loan, and you want to work with a lender that specializes in working with investors. The lender that I recommend is Chaley Ridge from Ridge Lending Group. She's an investor herself, and she only works with investors. If you want to find out more, go to ridgelendinggroup.com. That's R-I-D-G-E, lendinggroup.com, NMLS 42056. It's that dreaded time of year again. It's tax season, and if you're like me, you've been really busy over the last couple of months pulling together all the documentation for your rental properties, like all the receipts, organizing your income and expenses, and creating reports. And with tax reform this past year, there's a ton of changes that directly impact investors like us. That's why our sponsor, Stessa, has teamed up with top real estate CPAs to offer you the ultimate rental property tax guide that's going to help you keep more of your hard-earned dollars in your pocket. I think this guide is incredible. It's written in a way that is just so easy to understand. You don't have to be a CPA to understand this. They talk about some stuff that every rental property owner really needs to understand, like capital improvements versus repairs and maintenance costs. They talk about depreciation recapture, travel expenses, what's deductible, what's not deductible, and the home office deduction. It's a really great guide, very, very comprehensive. I think you're going to really enjoy reading it. And the best part about it is it's totally free when you sign up for a free Stessa account. Stessa is an essential and really cool tool that every rental property owner needs. It helps you track, manage, and communicate the performance of your real estate investments. And it'll save you a tremendous amount of time, especially during tax season. To get your free copy of the Rental Property Tax Guide, head over to stessa.com/rental taxes and sign up for a free Stessa account to track your rentals. That's Stessa, stessa.com/rental taxes. Thank you so much for listening and subscribing to the podcast. We'll be back with a new episode next Tuesday. My name is Dan Lane, and this has been the Rental Income Podcast.